Mickey Hart here. You're listening to GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour, sponsored by AIB. The same crew here as usual on a Thursday. And I'm back. I'm like a broken record here, lads, at this stage, because I had a look ahead at the January schedule for the cup competitions. So they start on the 30th of January. So 4 days after Stevens' Day, which you would think over Christmas that you might be allowed to catch up with all friends that are back in your local town. And Stevens' Day is a big day. Even though I'm going to Spain, I'm going to miss it this year, which I'm not too happy about. But you can't even do that now, because you've on the 30th of January all these kick off. So 4 days before, 4 days after Stevens' Day, you're could be facing into a match that can decide whether you get onto a squad or not. So it's a huge game for an awful lot of lads, and I think it's just lousy. But they play on the Saturday the 30th of December, so that's the day before New Year's Eve. So they can't even get out New Year's Eve because there's another game on January the 3rd. You know, and again, you have to stress that these are games which the Dear McConnellys or the Bernard Brogans or the, you know, the big names on every team, they don't care about. They might not even play, but they're bloody huge games to lads that are trying to make their way at the intercounty scene. So then they play Saturday, the 30th of December, Wednesday, the 3rd of January. There's another round Sunday the 7th of January, then Wednesday the 10th of January, then Sunday the 14th of January, then Saturday the 20th of January, and Sunday the 21st. So in 21 days, there's six rounds. Now, to win the O'Byrne Cup, there's five rounds, and I think the McKenna Cup is the same. There's a little round-robin effort thing as well. You're playing five games, lads. You win an All-Ireland in five games, Kerry would, and you're playing them in 20 days in January. And like, I mean, we've talked about this. It's, what's the point of this? Why are they putting on that hectic schedule in the worst bloody weather, the worst time of the year? You're not even giving lads a Christmas to maybe, like, I'm not saying lads don't go mad anymore over Christmas. They all come back in good shape. But geez, let them have Stevens' Day.
Yeah, this drum has nearly burst from us and I think everybody else banging it. And then if you add in the National League fixtures on top of that, there's a chance that a player might have played maybe 10, 15 games, I'd say, by the end of March.
By the end of
and
March.
Then they probably might only play two after that, which is ridiculous. I don't really know what you can add. I mean, as I said, we've been banging this drum for so long, but this just, I think there's only three teams playing in the McGrath Cup this year, four in the Munster Hurling League or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, Waterford and Tip are out of the Munster Hurling League.
I think, as we mentioned, that, like, the more teams that are going to pull out of these competitions, the more teams are seeing them for the inconvenience that they are. And I think within the next couple of years, you might see the end of them.
Yeah, so you have six O'Byrne Cup games. So we'll use Dublin as an example, who will probably win the O'Byrne Cup with their fourth team. They might even drop down another level.
Like, fourth, I mean, manager.
They're trying to discover a new Niall Scully, right? And like, or whoever, Tyrone sure win the McKenna Cup on a yearly basis as well, because they have the best squad and their second team can probably do well. So they'll play six or five games to win those, and then they'll play, isn't it, it's seven league games. So like,
seven,
by the
so
end
yeah.
of March, you've got the five and the seven. You've 12 games played by the end of March.
Yeah.
And then you're guaranteed two matches over the summer when it's the best weather. Lord.
Yeah, I mean, like, so, like, the teams here are only going to play two games in the summer. They'll be playing, what, 40% or something of their fixtures in January?
Oh, yeah.
So almost half of their season is over with by the time January is over. I don't know how many ways you can come at it. Like, it's ridiculous. And, like, it's funny because I saw Paddy Bradley, Derry legend, talking about during the week about the games to training ratio. And we always hear that as well. People do want games, but why are they all being squashed in at this time of the year? Like, just, it comes back to the provincial thing.
We're not going to get into that. Yeah, I'm surprised. I had this at the very start of the show. There's more news. Henry Shefflin, lads, he's going to manage Ballyhale Shamrocks along with his brother. And he interviewed his brother last year for one of the AIB videos. He was manager of Carrick Shock, who won the All-Ireland Intermediate Championship that very year. But they were too very strong for that level. Now, so Henry Shefflin is not going to play anymore. He's not going to be player manager. He's just going into management. And I was just kind of thinking, I wonder what he's going to be like as a manager. And there's no guarantees Henry Shefflin's going to be a good manager, because he's only ever experienced one manager. Like, I mean, he hasn't even had that, you know, who's been your influence. Now, it's a bloody good one. But you look at Brian Cody now with a Kilkenny team that's not star-studded, and he doesn't look as much of a genius as he did. We know, like, while he's a brilliant leader and he was ruthless like Jim Gavin, keeping that winning team together and hungry and that desire there. Whether tactically he was, you know, brilliant is up for debate as well. So, like, I mean, he would only have one influence from a manager. And it got me thinking, because Padraig Clancy, who's a friend of mine, he's training teams in Laois now, and I hear stories back from the teams, like, and Clancy has them running laps like Mikko. Do you know? Because that was Mikko got us success with those things, and it's like, that's influenced Clancy to the point that Clancy's a young and up and coming manager, but he's still depending on that lap stuff that Mikko did, and it, like, that cycle of the old school will never break unless you kind of try and break away from it. Now, Clancy has a good reputation as a manager and players like him because he's a real nice fella. He's a really good personality, outgoing, and the young players especially all look up to him. But I was interested to think, like, what Shefflin, is he just going to go with the same Cody kind of old school approach, or is he going to have his own ideas?
It's funny you say that about Clancy, though, because he would have had a lot more managers than what Shefflin had.
Yeah.
So maybe Mikko was the best in his eyes, and I know you might have disagreements with that. But, like, sometimes I think having a shit manager is more beneficial than a player who's going to end up being a manager, because you can learn what not to do and how not to treat somebody.
Yeah.
And you can see what wasn't working and just go the complete opposite from that as well.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised that he's going in so soon after. Like, he played, I know he only played one championship game this year, but immediately he knows all them players. Like, so that's going to change the dynamic with people that he's known for years. And just start, like, Ballyhale wouldn't be the biggest place in the world. So even just socially, like, players that he would have played with for years would be walking on eggshells around him. You know, they won't be having the same conversations. He'll know well that, like, players gossip behind a manager's back all the time. It's going to happen with him as well if he's going to be manager. So just how I thought he might have taken a break, even if he was going to manage, maybe try somewhere else for a while rather than going straight in with the team that he's played on for, what, like 20 years?
Yeah, no, that can be difficult. And I don't know. Like, I'm wondering how popular he is in that Ballyhale dressing room. And I tell you why. Because I went down to do the GAA Jackass down there in, they were training down in Waterford, and at the end of the training, I'd cleared it with their manager, and at the end of the training then they were in a group, and I went over to them and says, lads, this is what we're going to do. Henry's the only player that walked off the field, didn't want any part in what was no more than a bit of crack, right? So he went in and I shouted down at him, Henry, come on, will you wait? Because I wanted one or two of the big names, but TJ Reid and all the other big names that were there, they all waited to do it. I remember I was walking in off the field at the end of it, and they all enjoyed it, had a bit of crack, and one or two of them said to me, I don't mind that fella, he wouldn't hang around unless he was getting money. Do you know, he's all, like, these are, like, now I don't know how close, like, everyone in the team's not going to like you, you know, at the same time, but I was surprised at, this is King Henry here. You would imagine that his teammates would kind of worship him, rather. Yeah. I was a bit
for
taken aback.
For a manager, that might be the worst thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not, maybe not. But it was an interesting one. Another bit of news here, lads, is that Paddy Carr has stepped down as Ballymun manager, and really he had to go because of the team Ballymun Kickhams have. They really should be winning All-Ireland club championships, and they haven't won even a Dublin championship since 2012. Jesus, that long ago. And then they were in the All-Ireland final in 2013, the year Bridget's won it. Hope I have those years right. But he's lost his last 2 years to St. Vincent's, and there's no huge shame in that because Vincent's are brilliant as well. But Ballymun Kickhams, talent wise, I think are better than St. Vincent's, but St. Vincent's are a much better team. I think that's the distinction between the two. But then again, you look at St. Vincent's, and I was thinking about this game, this manager's job. Not that I wanted to do it or anything like that, but imagine ringing Jim Gavin saying, can you release the five lads? But no, but like, I mean, I'm trying to think, is this an attractive job or is this an unattractive job? Because, like, you'll never have the players, right? So the way inter-county season's gone now, like, they have got five on the Dublin panel, and, like, these are five really important players. So they've Comerford, Small, McMahon, McCarthy and Rock, and Paddy Small is brilliant and he'll be in there next year. So six are gone. Now they've got good underage players, so they'll have lads with the under-21s and the minors. And I remember with Portlaoise, when we would have had loads of inter-county players and under-21s, like, you'd be surprised at the atmosphere around training. It's like, there could be seven or eight lads there because all the other lads are inter-county lads. So then the dynamic is, when you're finished then with the county, you're coming in and you're trying to be this leader and you haven't been seen all year. And then, unless you play that game smartly, the club lads would be like, who does this lad think he is?
Yeah.
Do you know? Mm. Because you need to nearly come back in and not think that you're the big, you know, that kind of way. So I'm reintegrating these five or six Dublin players back into that group who might be like, it's an us and them kind of situation all year. It's a really difficult job, even though it's an absolutely unbelievable job at the same time.
It's definitely attractive from the outside straight away, because suddenly when you take that job, you're in line to win an All-Ireland, and that's obviously very attractive. But while someone drills behind us and it's putting me off, but it's honestly that dynamic that you're talking about is very tough, because when you come in, like, it's not only do you have to play it smart, but you also don't have a clue what's been going on all year. Like, you don't have a grasp on the issues or how people are playing or who's been falling out with who. So not only are players probably looking at you from a different perspective, you are also looking at them from a different perspective.
Yeah, and like, another thing is, you're coming from an inter-county setup where Jason Sherlock's coaching you, Jim Gavin's managing you, and then you come back to a club setup which by nature is going to be more relaxed, and it's going to be like not as serious or not as professional. Yeah. And you kind of have to accept that as well, that if you come in and look for those same standards to come across the board in the club, regular club lads will be like, you know, like, I mean, it's very difficult for a manager in those situations. I remember the Portlaoise management, and it's very, very similar position to Ballymun. It's like, if you keep banging on that drum all year about being serious, being everything, they're still club players. Like, they're club players for a reason, because they haven't maybe the talent or maybe that kind of mental strength that inter-county players have, and they can't be expected to have a professional attitude at training every night for 9 months of the year. So like, you have to cut your cloth, and the Portlaoise managers that went well with us were very relaxed for a lot of the year, and only would crank it up then at a certain time of year. But you can't be cranked up all year round, you know. And like, I mean, I think that's what a lot of club managers kind of maybe fall down on, as in they think it's inter-county, and it's not.
It's just a natural assumption as well, that when you get James McCarthy, you get Dean Rock, you get John Small back, that you're going to be amazing, you know, without kind of taking into account how they have to integrate back into a team that hasn't had them for so long, and to get that dynamic right. But as Colin said, I think if you're a manager, you'd see it as a challenge, because like, when you look at it at the start of the year, you're looking at your panel, you're probably thinking this is possibly the most talented club team in the country. So my challenge is to weave, you know, when they come back to with the existing panel, and if we get it all right, because they have been so close for so long, you know, getting to an All-Ireland 2013, getting so close in Dublin since, if they do get it right, if they win Dublin, that they'll have the players together then until March, and potentially there's an All-Ireland.
That's the thing. And the problem with it as well, though, is that, and this is always a risk in Dublin club football, is that you get a hard draw in round one or round two when you haven't had them all year. They're coming out. Chances are the Dublin lads are coming off an All-Ireland win. It's going to take them a kind of, they deserve to celebrate that for a week, you know. And then that's the difficulty of getting them going. Now, you'd imagine when you get them going and you get the county lads there the two or three nights a week, then you get the momentum and you're in the mix.
Yeah, and in fairness, though, with every big club, you're going to have this problem. There are going to be a lot of county players in those club teams that have to be integrated. And yeah, like, it's going to be widespread. Whatever team you take, this is the gig with club teams.
Yeah. You're
going to
That's the thing about Vincent's, though. Vincent's don't. They're such a brilliant team, but they don't have those huge numbers in with Dublin. Like, they're a team. And I think that's reflected in the way they play and the spirit that they have. And they're able to beat a Ballymunda is arguably more talented. Like, there's a huge advantage. And you can't stress it enough. And notice from talking to Portlaoise managers is having everybody. Mm. Having everybody. From a morale, from a team spirit, from the momentum, from working on things. All these things. Like, I mean, you can't even quantify how important it is to have all your men. And they are going to be missing six next year, which is half their team. And like, it's a goalkeeper. Look, Comerford, who's brilliant at the kickouts. Imagine not having someone who's so important to the team kickouts wise. You don't have your midfielder who's going to work off those kickouts. Yeah. Like, what can you work on without all these fellas? You don't have your full forward, you don't have your centre back. Where do you play Philly? And they always struggle where to play Philly, because like, Philly played cornerback last year, and I wouldn't have him anywhere near cornerback at club level. I'd play in midfield, but he can't work through that during the year because he doesn't have him, and it's just you're hamstrung. But hopefully they'll find a new manager. I haven't been asked yet, but like, I mean, you know, I'll obviously have to give it a lot of consideration.
You made a good pitch there, Noel, in fairness.
I won't interview for it. No, I think my reputation speaks for itself.
You're and a deep regret.
Right, lads, John Costello has been in the news. Now, I know I have a rule that I don't like to comment on county seconds, secretary's reports. But John Costello is a big name, and because of the great work he's done for Dublin, we said we'd give him the respect and play a little bit of audio from John Costello's report.
It looks as if I've had the last laugh on a lot of people who really didn't think I had it in me to become a brilliant priest.
Well, what I say to those people is, look at me now.
But eventually, I got out of his headlock. And now, where are you, Father Eamon Hunter?
Working with some pygmies in the South Seas, and where am I? Here, accepting a Golden Cleric Award.
For being a top priest. Yes, of course. He thought it would be a great idea, great fun, to pour water on this young novice's mattress. But of course, 30 years later,
the smile has been very much wiped
off Father Barry Kiernan's face.
And wiped off all those journalists that called Jim Gavin. That's what, the minute I started reading that, I just thought of that. And that's the kind of way it was. Now, look, I don't really blame John Costello, because I am a little bit like, I'll get my own back on them, and I feel like I've been slighted, and you won't find a fella who looks for revenge more than me. Like, I'll wait I'll wait years. I'm not like, oh, let's rise above that. I'm right back in. Like, shrimp. Only 2 weeks ago, or last week, I lynched the county board chairman, newly county board chairman, because I've got history with him. And I went, I'll get him back someday. And then I found my opportunity. So, like, I don't really blame John Costello. He feels slighted. He feels his manner's been slighted. I don't think it's that big a deal that people were commenting on Jim Gavin. Like, we did it here on the podcast. Even the very next day after the All-Ireland, we were saying we thought it was a little bit weird, his non-celebration. But, like, they obviously feel slighted. I'd like to... I do think that some of these Facebook pages, these Hill 16 armies and all these, which are no better than troll accounts in my opinion, I think they feed into this anti-Dublin narrative. I don't think there's an anti-Dublin narrative. I think there's unbelievable respect in the media for Dublin and what they achieve. But, like, I mean, you're allowed question funding to them. You're allowed question, like, Jim Gavin's reaction, which is on a human level. If this is not Dublin, this will be any county. But they, like, I think within their camp they have such a kind of a siege mentality in there now that they genuinely think that they're being slighted and that everyone's against them, and I do strongly believe that that's what they think. And Costello's report definitely backs up that kind of idea.
And what we'll say about Hill 16 Army is, whilst they're very partisan, like, they had Dermot Connolly on for an hour-long interview on their podcast the other day.
I wouldn't listen to it, because I've had enough of that Hill 16 Army on Twitter. Your man that runs it is nothing short of a troll, and I don't even want to discuss... Dermot Connolly is a brilliant interviewee, but I don't want to discuss it, because I've no interest in that fella. I think that he winds up... He's creating this kind of soccer mentality that your team's most important and everybody else are, you know, assholes, and the Dublin supporters are buying into this because they get a big following. It's not what the GAA is about. It's not what GAA support is about. Like, I mean, that's GAA fans. If it keeps going down the road, that lad's trying to, like, cultivate, there'd be fans segregated. Like, I don't know what road that's going down, but that kind of nonsense that he is feeding into, and fans are doing it, and I see it on Twitter. I don't want nothing to do with that fella or anything to do with his podcast.
It was particularly bad as well before the between the two finals in 2016 between Dublin and Mayo.
It was toxic
because there was a 2 week break and there was so much going on with Lee Keegan and Jeremy Connolly. It got completely out of hand, really out of hand, and because of that I didn't really buy it this year when Hill 16 Army and a couple more went in for this all friendly approach, you know. And it was hard to buy that on the back of what was said last year.
In fairness, though, before those big games, like, Mayo fans can
I'm not exonerating Mayo fans. I'm just saying that this is
You can be partisan, and all county blogs, sure, the Mayo have got their own podcast, and it's focused on Mayo because it's a Mayo podcast, and a Dublin podcast are focused on Dublin, and the Dublin GAA had one where I think it was Kieran Whelan used to do it with other players, and that's fine. What my problem is that kind of hateful stuff that's kind of been out there, and everybody's against us, and then all the supporters and this bloody Reservoir Dubs crowd, and, like, there's the toxic nastiness that's on that, and lies, and that's there, and that's soccer stuff, and I don't see that in other counties as much. And I think that these big Twitter and Facebook pages are really, really instigating this stuff.
I know what you're saying, but, like, even we put up a story about Jeremy Connolly, a nice story about the first time he saw Brian Fenton play, like, and he was thinking, who is this guy? And just like the toxic comments underneath that from people outside of Dublin. So like they are almost being poked sometimes as well. Like, just, you can't put anything up about Connolly, for example, without everybody else in the country losing their shit over
it. Well, Connolly's divisive. Like, I mean, if you did that about Bernard Brogan, there would be nothing but love. You know what I mean? Connolly's kind of been sent off, and he's maybe a more controversial figure. So like, I mean, that's fair enough. But there's no hate for Dublin players that I see. Like, Connolly maybe is an exception, and
McMahon
that's
as well. Like, there's
But McMahon's been in for eye gouging. He's been in for, like, you know, like any player from any county. Ricey McManaman would have that same thing. Any player from a county that plays on the edge and gets sent off. Like, I mean, there are other counties aren't going to like
these
players.
I'm just trying to see where they're coming from. Even like Jim Gavanagh, who's this nice fella, but we're taking exceptions.
But look at Paul Flynn, look at Bernard Brogan, look at Keane O'Sullivan, look at Brian Fenton, look at all these fellas who are pure class, Dean Rock. You won't see any kind of nonsense from any other counties about these fellas. They're highly, highly regarded. Yeah. Jack McCaffrey's loved because he's a bit of a character.
Yeah.
It's a legacy thing as well, though, that like the Dubs kind of feed it into the fact that like they were, you know, hated by 31 counties for such a long time, you know, before Jim Gavin took over, even before Pat Gilroy took over. And I'd say that's, it's hard to kind of remove that. And I'd say a lot of Dubs kind of still feed into that, the fact that they nearly like the fact that
maybe
they use it,
to
be hated by outside.
And like, it's a siege mentality, and Ciarán Maginni, Armagh often created it and made it out of nowhere that everybody's against us, where I'm like, geez, I wasn't really too interested in Armagh, but like that's what they're trying to cultivate. And maybe we think, because it's Dublin and it's Jim Gavin and he's such a great manager, I would have thought like Jim Gavin's maybe above having to create that siege mentality. I'm not sure how great they are anyways, but maybe that's a tactic. Let's create this, let's create that everybody hates us and we're in this together. And that works for them. Now, I thought they'd be more sophisticated in that, and I'm not saying they are doing that, but they could be doing it.
No, but then what happens then, though, is your man Costello, because they're obviously taking this approach, he comes out and he's sort of trying to play down the population idea that Dublin, they might have a bigger population, but they have to compete with soccer and rugby.
Yeah.
As if that's not happening all over the country anyway. But you also, you know, it doesn't matter if they're competing with something else. Like, what was that stat that Ballyboden have more under 14s than Leitrim? So that is still a thing.
And that's the thing,
But it's also something that I don't think Dublin need to hide from. It's not really their problem. It's up to the GAA. Like, in a GAA, wanted to split Dublin or whatever. I know that's what they're paranoid about. But then you'd have to go on to counties and split towns, or like, where does it stop sort of thing. Like,
but that's the thing. And like, I mean, the way I look at this is, I'm from Portlaoise, who's a really big club and a dominant club in Laois.
Yeah.
And there's clubs around Laois that want Portlaoise split.
Yeah.
And I can see their point. Like, I can see their point. In other big towns like Carlow, like Newbridge, they all have two big clubs in the town. Portlaoise has one. So, like, when people say that about Portlaoise, I don't say, you all hate. I'm like, well, we have much higher playing numbers than all of you. So, like, if you can say it is a bit of an unfair advantage that we have a much bigger population than clubs we're competing against. Now, in Dublin's defence, what we do say, and it is a bit of an excuse, is that there are the rugby, the soccer and stuff like that. Usually if you're in a small club and you grow up, there's very little fall off rates. Like, the GAA is what it's all about. It's a local community, it's a small community, and the whole thing revolves around that. There's no drop off rate. Mm-hmm. Like, look at Chrissy McCaig talking about Slocknail. They have all their players in jobs locally, and none of them leave to go to America. Portlaoise wouldn't have that close knit thing. Lads would be living a good bit away from each other, and there's drop off. Lads go play rugby, lads play soccer. Yeah. And if a lad drops off and goes away, he's not really chased. Whereas in a village, you might be shunned, as in, Jesus, look what he's done to you know. So there are other factors like that where Dublin do have a point. I just don't understand why they go so crazy about this when it's a fair proposal. They can oppose it, but I don't know why they go so crazy about it. Like, their playing numbers for Kilmacud, Crokes, Ballyboden, all these is out of control. So there is clearly an advantage in population. I just don't understand why it's not accepted and said, look, this is the way it is, but we accept that it is, you know, we have a much bigger population.
Yeah, and but as I said, something they don't have to worry about, because if that was a proposal, then they can just turn around and say, well, okay, then fix the GAA as a whole, fix all the clubs in every county. And like, you know, there's a club in Derry that has two people in primary school. Like, you know, that's the sort of people they have coming through compared to the city team in Derry, the town team in Derry.
Yeah. But you just don't want this toxic, and I don't think Costello's report has fed into it as well. And I think it's toxic. I think it's a bit like soccer. I think it's where you follow your own team and you hate every other team and they all hate us. And I don't think GAA is like that. I don't hate Dublin. I don't hate. There's no county in Ireland I hate. You go through phases where you might not like a team too much, but there's no county. You don't hate. There's no hatefulness in the GAA, I don't think. And there shouldn't be, because supporters mingle together and you wish you're the team that's beaten you good luck. And that's kind of the way it's supposed to be. So I don't like the way this is going. and I don't like these Twitter and Facebook pages that are feeding into it. And I do, while I'm all for a man getting his own back and waiting in the long grass and I little apples will grow again, I think John Costello, after Dublin winning what they did this year, like, he, John Costello might not be like me who wants to get his revenge. He should probably rise above that in a county board secretary position and not go down that road, I think. But anyways, this will probably be construed by those Facebook pages as another anti-Dublin rant. It's almost they're a parody. They're just a joke.
You'll get them back, will you?
Yeah. Well, don't think I don't have that lad's card. I have these lads' cards marked. Right, Davy Fitz, lads, a bit, little bit more upbeat here. He's a gas man. And obviously this is Davy, who doesn't pay attention to anything that's been wrote or written or anything. He's given out about bookies odds that Wexford are 25-1 to win the All-Ireland. So, like, I mean, they're last in the list pretty much outside of Offaly, of the more, you know, the more upper tier teams, even though you'd make the argument to say Offaly aren't anywhere near that. So they're kind of last in this. And Davy says, if I was going by Paddy Power, we probably shouldn't turn up at all next year. So here's a siege mentality being created on the back of Paddy Power odds. You just can't, you can't beat this kind of stuff. But like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, I do think they should be maybe ahead of Limerick or one of, you know, maybe a little bit higher up. But isn't it gas what managers will cling on to say we're being slighted here, lads?
It's interesting, though. Maybe it's an indication of where Wexford are at now, because last year Davy was playing everything down and saying, ah, geez, give us a bit of time. You know, we're still getting together. But now it's almost like he's ramping it up and asking the question to the players. And it's something that I think Martin O'Neill's very good at. Vernon, one thing he's very good at anyway is just gauging the temperature of the room and knowing when boys need to kick up the earth or when things need to calm down a bit. But now seems like
he's
Davey's
doing that early this time,
like,
so I'm not sure, like to me that seems perfectly fair that Wexford are 25-1 maybe.
Yeah. You'd only have them sneaking ahead of Limerick, I mean, potentially.
Dublin, I think, are 20-1. They have players back, they have a new manager, they're bound to get a bit of momentum. If anything, by Davy's logic, Offaly should be more pissed off that they're considered 20 times less likely to win the All-Ireland than Wexford are, because they're way out of 500-1. Neither is going to happen, but you know, he's just, as you said, siege mentality and any excuse to get one. Like,
yeah, there's no doubt about that. You didn't mention Dublin yet. The news about Dublin this week is Johnny McCaffrey and Peter Kelly are back in the mix, and we know Danny Sutcliffe is back in there as well. And like, I mean, Liz, you might think I'm kind of forcing this a little bit, but it was a comment from Anthony Cunningham and it annoyed me, and it annoyed me because this is the comment, and he says, he's talking about Pat Gilroy and he's talking about the year ahead and about how great Pat Gilroy is, and he says he was out of management but he still holds a huge, huge interest and he's massively interested in this project. It's not a project, mate. Am I going over the top on this now? I don't like that terminology. It's not
a project.
It's so clinical and it's so like, here, mate, this isn't a business deal. This is an inter-county squad embarking on a new year to try and win something. It's not a project. No, I'm just overdoing it.
What was the Keane Ward said during the year? There's no such thing as a 3-year plan.
I didn't agree with that. It's probably the only thing all year I didn't agree with Keane on.
Maybe it'll replace process as the most used word in the GAA. We'll see. That's really annoyed me for the last few years, but anything to kind of replace it. I don't know. It's as you said, it's very kind of corporate.
It's jargon, it's jargon. Yeah, and transition, and I'm fairly proud of this podcast that we don't use the word transition. I didn't ban it, we just choose not to use it because transition really pisses me off as well. We might be moving away from transition now that the Tyrones and Monaghans are all turning over a new leaf and coming back next year. We're seeing a whole new Ulster Championship.
Can't wait for Tyrone to drag Dublin into the Dublin.
Gemma Begley has welcomed 3 motions proposing that the Tyrone ladies footballers shouldn't be charged for using the Tyrone GAA Centre of Excellence in Garvahy. So she's talking about the Tyrone senior ladies were charged $13,650 for using the Garvahy facilities in 2017. And this just seems bizarre to me. Just don't understand it. Like, the women's game camogie and ladies football has been separate from the GAA since its foundation in, I think, 1974. It's always been separate. Why is it separate? Like, I just don't get it. They've no facilities of their own. Why maybe they want to stand on their own 2 feet, I'm not too sure. Why would they want to stand on their own feet? They have no facilities. They're being charged to use. Why is it not under GAA umbrella? I just don't get it. I don't understand why it is. I see Teresa McNabb, who's a from Fermanagh. I think she's a Fermanagh ladies footballer. She says the Fermanagh County Board don't charge the Fermanagh ladies. So it's obviously not a rule set in stone. I'd be very disappointed with counties that are charging their own counties female camogie and football players to use the GA facilities. Or why can't an agreement come? It just seems so bizarre to me that your own county, a team that is representing your county is being charged to use your facilities. This is just ridiculous.
Is it Claire Conlon from Laois that was saying that they can't afford the Laois Centre of Excellence, so they're not even being charged because they can't.
But why don't they join up then? Like, I can't. We need to do a piece on this. Like, why would the ladies not come in under the GA umbrella, or why is the GA not want them in?
Why does the GA not? Yeah, why don't, like, they're happy enough to accrue the GPA? Why don't they go out and get the LGFA? Like, that's a real bad. It looks really bad, and it is really bad that they don't take all the, what's half the population, and take them in under their umbrella. It can still be a separate entity in its own department or whatever, and still self-govern, but it should be under the GA.
Yeah. So one of the motions mentioned about for legal implications, is there a possibility of a smaller fee? So I'm not sure, is there some legal obligation on behalf of the ladies footballers to pay something? But anyway, what happened was, from what I can see, just checked it there a while ago, there was not, the motions were proposed, but it said, okay, nothing was done and it'll be discussed at a later date. So looks like they're going to have to, as of now anyway, it looks like we're going to have to pay for next year as well.
13,000.
Like, that's a lot of money.
Like, I know from my own, like, insurance prices are a lot higher for females and stuff. Like, you know, is this a problem? Is this why their costs are so dear? Is this why they aren't being brought in as part of the GA as a whole? I don't know. Like, that is an issue.
Do they want to? Like, that's another thing. Maybe they're happy to stand on their own 2 feet, but this seems like a really, it's a huge inconvenience to be charging clubs and counties for use of their fields.
Time to get Jarlath Burns back on.
Time to get Jarlath. I'll just find another reason to give out to poor Jarlath, who's brilliant with his time with us all year. And he listens to the podcast. So how's it going there, Jarlath? Happy Christmas to you. Right, listen, we're coming back and we're going to talk to Greg McCartan.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we did actually sold them to. I think I had 4 donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey, so there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches, never. And so you can actually, one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey needs a palace.
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, delighted to say Fulham Irish manager and former Down star Greg McCartan is on the line now. Greg, how's it going?
Not too bad, Willie. I'm keeping good. Yourself?
Good, good. All good here. Come here, you had a bit of disappointment last Sunday with the game getting called off. You know, you obviously prepared for it, but you didn't really let that hold you back going out with the Curra Finn lads after the game. After the game, that didn't happen.
After the game didn't happen, well, as I said, if we're not going to play the game, we might as well let on it, you know. It was very disappointing. I mean, I'm sure it was disappointing for Curra Finn. I'm sure a lot of people travelled over for it. The game, I was at the pitch at 10 o'clock on the morning, and it was just absolutely unplayable, you know. So I know they're out a lot of money. Hopefully the GAA look after them, but as I say, it just couldn't be helped. And unfortunately, we've been waiting 8 weeks for our game now, and it's going to be at least probably the middle of January. With no confirmation yet of when the game's going to be. We thought we might have got that last night, but still no word. So we're still waiting to find out when we're going to play it, you know?
Yeah, so like, it is kind of inconvenient for it to stretch over to Christmas. Usually when it stretches over to Christmas, you're a provincial champion and, you know, you're preparing for an All-Ireland semi-final that's in February. So you're kind of in no man's land heading into the Christmas period.
Well, we had a chat with the players on Saturday after, or Sunday after the game was called off. We had a few of us met up and said, look, we'll take this week off. A lot of guys have Christmas parties and staff dues and stuff from it. I'll say, we have been training for 8 weeks. So I said, we'll take this week off, and we'll find out on Wednesday night, you know, when we're going to re-meet again. So we're going to have to meet probably on Saturday afternoon. Hopefully by Saturday we'll know when we're going to play. It's going to mean guys probably coming back from Ireland a couple of days earlier and stuff, you know. But Honestly, I mean, I haven't probably couldn't have about a bunch of lads, and they're so keen and so eager to, you know, to get playing this game, because, you know, it means a lot to them. You know, they're probably never going to play in a game against their lives again. So we want to make sure that on the day, whenever the game does take place, that we're not just going to be out there, you know, just to be cannon fodder for Cara Finn. Like, you know, we want to actually give them a game, you know.
Yeah, so is that like at the start of the year, obviously winning a London Championship is the focus, but do you go into a game against Cara Finn giving the lads a good chance of an upset?
Well, I mean, I say we set our goals at the start of the year. We had obviously with Owen Mulligan on board, we got a few new lads in. We lost 9-10 players from last season, but London's fluid, it just keeps moving all the time. And, you know, we've lost 3 players to Australia now. Since the championship final, which has not helped me there, but we really set our goals the day after obviously winning the London thing, and then we said, look, you know, we're going to be facing the Connacht champions here, and obviously people like Cara Finns and Bridges, Cassavale all came to mind. We said to ourselves, like, what are we going to do? Are we just going to half ass it for the next 6-7 weeks, or are we actually going to knuckle down and train and go for it? So to be honest with you, now I've had 24-25 training ever since that, three times a week. And we've put a huge effort in, and I say, what we don't want to do is turn up there whenever the game comes and just be absolutely railroaded. We don't want that to happen. We want to try and do the best we can. I think we can, you know, I think we can play a good game against them, and that's what we're aiming for, you know.
How do you keep that going then, Greg? Because obviously Cara Finn have 3 games in the Connacht Championship to keep themselves ticking over, and it's a game every week or every 2 weeks, whereas you've got this big break and all the other teams are out of it in London, so I presume getting challenge matches is really difficult. And I know the rules are changing next year and the London champions are going into the Connacht Championship, yeah, which seems an awful lot fairer for the London teams to not have that big break.
Absolutely. Well, that is the first thing. Well, we've got a couple of challenge matches against Kieran Daly, who's the London manager. We had a couple of challenge matches against them, which helped him and us, because obviously it meant that we weren't just training for the sake of training, and we were getting games every game. And then Kieran can get a look at some lads. He is coming in. And then we flew home one weekend to play up in Galway with Paddy Talley's Samiri's team. So, you know, we've got 3 games, and like I say, that particular weekend we flew home. All the guys put the money in, put the target. 150 plates to stay up in Kirkstown for the night, our own flights and everything else, and like 24 lads all travelled over to Ireland, you know. So, I mean, the commitment level is unbelievable. So, I mean, you know, I've no fear that, you know, that we'll put that much effort in, that there's no way that we're going to lie down now just because it was for Cara Finn or anyone else, or we'll make, you know.
Yeah, paint a picture of what it's like over there, Greg, because I was reading quotes from you saying that, like, you train or you tug out on the side of the field, you train in some jail, you know, and like, I know Tyrconnell Gaels and stuff are more established clubs and they might have facilities, whereas Fulham Irish are only a new club formed in 2006, I think. So, like, I mean, the facilities might not be there. So, like, give us an idea of what it's like.
Yeah, well, we train right beside Wormwood Scrubs Jail. Wormwood Scrubs Jail all runs right alongside us. We have 2 playing pitches there. But we have no change facility. So, like, we just change on the side of the field. If it rains, then they would run down to my van and put the gear in my van. But we have temporary lights running off generators and stuff that you see at festivals and stuff. But that's basically what we have, you know what I mean? We haven't got anything else. We haven't got a clubhouse or anything. I know TCG and the lads, when they're training, they come on Gales and they train, like, they get food and all after training. They've got changing rooms, showers, facilities and everything else. We just wouldn't have that, you know? But there is a facility there beside it. It's the Limber Christie Running Sack. Sure, half time you go in there, it hasn't been locked before 9 o'clock, you know? So,
right.
But, you know, that Spartan kind of effort, it probably just typifies and just, you know, all our guys can identify with it. Some of the guys, we have to travel 80 minutes on a train to get the training, do the training, and then 80 minutes back home again, you know, sitting in the training gear, should it be the head of summer or the middle of winter. So, you know, obviously, these boys aren't doing it for no, you know, reason. It's not that for them, only just the fact that they love the game, and that's probably the way we play, and it shows in the way we play. You know, they're quite a passionate bunch of lads, and they're dedicated, and they're a joy to be around, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so it's almost like playing, from reading that and listening to you, is like playing in America, where you might train in a school pitch or some kind of pitch that you're renting, and you work a really hard day, and then you have to rush to get the train, and it's just, you know, you probably get a few quid out in America, but all your fellas will be doing it just to keep, you know, playing club football.
That's it. Well, I mean, like yourself, I was in America years ago, and, you know, you jump in the back of a pickup truck, the next thing, 10 minutes later, you're training,
yeah,
you know, and you drop back off again. You know, you're hanging out the back of a van someplace, and the kind of 20 years coming from work, and you know, sweat and tears. But I'd say a lot of it, but like probably 95% of the guys that are on the squad, there's very few of us in the trade. Most of the guys are all working in offices and, you know, quite high end jobs, some of them and stuff. So they're coming in there and sits up the set of feet. Probably people wonder where the hell they go with these sits and stuff on them, up the set of feet, finding a bag around the set of feet, and the next thing, running on the feet like a mad man. But they seem to love it and they keep coming back, so that's all we can ask for, you know.
Yeah, just launching the good suit into the back of your van then when it's raining.
Just launching the back of the van, yeah. That's it. No shower, nothing.
Close.
10 shirts a week, I'd say.
Yeah, you won't be recycling, you know, that shirt the next day anyways.
No, definitely not. No, you wouldn't get away outside then, I mean.
Come here, you mentioned the turnover of players, Craig, and that must be the real frustrating thing as a manager in London. And this is your first year with Fulham Irish, but like, I mean, you might not have this same group back again, so I'm sure you're kind of telling them that, and this might be the last game we ever play together as a group, and maybe in a weird way you can use that to motivate the group.
Well, to be honest, that was one of the things. The last Thursday night before the final, when we were in the huddle, I said, look, we're never going to stand this huddle again. That's a fact. Because next week, no matter what happens, or we say next Thursday night, to be guaranteed that this group of players, you know, for a championship, everybody's there. Every man is there. They're going to make sure they're there so they get the jersey on Sunday and stuff. And lo and behold, Daniel Eastwood, a young fellow from Belfast, he played the game, came on, did a cracking game, great player for Belfast. I should kind of down that out near Hollywood. And on the Wednesday morning, he went to Australia. You know, so right. Like, he was never seen again. A couple of other lads then got the championship medal and probably just didn't get the same commitment in the game. But, you know, and then come up now, this next game, the way it's working out now, that I have a guy from Blanche Island, Sean O'Sullivan. He's going to from Kerry. He's going to, on the 6th of January, he goes to Australia. And then our full forward, Rowan Turley, from Saville and County Down, he's going to Australia. Both emigrating over to Australia to work for a while. So, you know, it's just totally fluid. And I think they actually bought into that. You know, they do realise it because a lot of the guys have been there before, Fulham Irish and back and forward, and they know that like there's six or seven fellas definitely not going to be there next season, and they know there'll be 10 you guys coming in. And but what we're trying to do is just promote the club. You know, we're trying to get up and challenge the TCGs and whoever this world, you know, and the Cairns and all that have been doing it year in, year out. So we took our first step, but I mean, you know, it's just it's a baby step, so we're just going to try and keep going as best we can, you know.
Yeah, is the challenge with that kind of a club getting that club bond? Because you hear all players talking about the club and this is their lads I grew up with and all that, and that's not, you don't have that. You almost have a county set up in a club set up where you need to get bonds created, you need to get them, you know, to have each other's backs, and that's probably a challenge coming in as a manager.
Yeah, well, absolutely, because I mean, obviously I was very aware of that, and you are aware of it when you're among them. But we've got some great leaders in the team, which would be like Michael Murphy, our captain from Galway, and the lad Dave O'Connor, County League Jim, and John Gilfetter from Down and Burn, Chris Foley, and these guys. And all these guys, you know, they realise this is, and what they've done all year is try and, you know, create that atmosphere where we are like a family, you know what I mean? And if anything happens on the field, we're one in, all in. And everyone mugs you first arrive, I says, look, lads, I don't care if one Mulligan, I says, it sounds not failing somebody, just thinks I'm going to take a cut of him because of who he is. I said, he's getting, anybody getting into him, we make sure we have his back more against Scotland and whoever it is. You know, one and all, and that, you know, that's the way it's going to be. I'm not going to let some guy just walk over Mulligan because he thinks he's going to go back to the pub afterwards and say, oh, I got to cut him with Mulligan. So yeah, that was sort of way with him, sort of year, you know, and it's gonna, that's the way we're going to set ourselves all out, make sure we weren't going to walk over. And but he's bought into it, and I assure you, nobody's walking over alone. Not that anybody would anyway, because he can get off himself. But it's worked for us, you know. And I say it's generating that kind of family parochial thing that you wouldn't have, obviously, with the setup we have. But trying to get that into them, it, you know, it has worked because they're a good bunch. They do go out together and they're starting to socialise together and meet one another outside of football. Whereas before, it was simply turn up to train weekend, you know, match, and then you don't see each other from week to week, you know. But hopefully we're trying to get them more in, or like that family more on track here, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned Owen Mulligan there. He's just seamlessly fit into the setup. I hear. Did you get him out? Did you get him out there, or how did Owen come about joining?
No, well, Owen actually was actually probably there was actually another club was signing Owen out, but there's our president of the club, Seamus McGillis, the strongman, and he had heard wind that Owen would might be coming out to London, so he got in contact with him and said, "Look, come on there." Obviously, Peter Canavan had trained our team a couple of years ago before I arrived, on and off, and he had worked with, you know, like them, all of my Irish lads, the good lads, the up-and-coming team, and, you know, obviously, Super Cardinals out there training them, because you'll enjoy it, and they're a bunch of lads, you don't have any problem with them. And Owen just came aboard, and I mean, he's been a revelation. I mean, he's been a big link on what's happened, you know. I've never seen a man work better. And as I said, as many in an interview I said before, like, you know, everybody thought this term Sturm Jagger was coming. Funny, like, I didn't know much about him either. I played a few games against him and played a couple of times with him for Ulster, but you know, I was expecting this Herm Sturm Wildman, and nothing could be further than the truth. Yeah. Like, I'm sure he has his moments. Like, I'm not gonna paint him up as the angel altogether, but
yeah,
he's definitely a great asset to us, you know.
But you always get that as well, and I get that an awful lot too, and I'm sure you have. Oh, he's a wild man, he's crazy. And like, yeah. I mean, you can't play inter-county level year after year and be a madman. Like, I mean, it just doesn't work like that. Maybe in the context of your teammates you might be a bit wilder, but that doesn't mean you're this deranged person people are expecting.
Yeah, well, that's true. Most of the time, I haven't let them down in that regard. But seriously, I wonder why. Like, this is it. I mean, you don't get to all Ireland medals and All Stars. Mulligan got them if you're like, you know, this party animal, because you know, Mickey Hart probably wouldn't win the Stuttgart, you know. So, I mean, if our king can tell you, I was talking to Kieran Daly, and Kieran Daly says like the influence brought to London and the change in the mindset and the whole. You know, people listen to him when he's talking, people listening. You know, I just know by him that he's just a great character and a brilliant player to have about us, you know.
Yeah, and the great thing about Muggsy, especially out there for you, is that he was never lightning fast anyway. So, like, I mean, he still has the class. That'll never leave him. And his game wasn't dependent on speed. So I'm sure, like, he's still top notch at that level out there.
Absolutely. I mean, his passing, I'd say the bit passing sometimes is just a joy to watch, you know what I mean? But even his influence in the drill, you know what I mean? And you know, some of them maybe they make a mistake, you know, and some might cock on up that maybe wasn't just as talented footballer or someone else. You know, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's next ball. But as you say, it's not about his speed. It's about his guile. It's about his cleverness, you know, when he's off the ball and he's tackling and, you know, coaching when to tackle, when to step on, when to step off. Things like that he brings the team, you know.
Yeah. What's your style of play with them, Greg? Because I know you've been on record where you're not a huge fan of the modern game and the really defensive tactics. But at the same time, even if you're not a fan of it, you still maybe understand that you have to play that game a little bit at times as well.
Yeah, well, all along, right up until the final, it was totally, you know, I would be totally, totally against it. I don't believe it. I don't believe training boys kill it. I think it takes more effort to train boys to play negatively than it does offensively. But I know now you get into the Carlow game, since our final, we've been sitting, you know, what's coming ahead of me, we're going to watch Kiji for, or, you know, any games on Sunday there and watch the club games, you know, a lot of games, our defensive catch and, you know, cat and mouse, waiting on the stake. You know, they don't really be free scoring, high scoring games. So, I mean, we can't allow Carlow Finn to come run to us and us going to think we're going to take them on man to man 15-15. That's not going to happen, you know what I mean? I'd be a fool to let myself down like that and think I would have this big, better idea than anybody else. So, obviously, we're going to have to cut our class to sit that game. But, I mean, certainly in London, you know, I mean, it's rare in London, especially, that you have to go totally defensive. Although two or three teams over here do it, and which is disappointing because there's some great players. But, you know, you can see them running back into zones and shouting, well, you're not in your zone. And I'm going, Jesus Christ, are you serious? Like, you know what I mean? What are you worried about zone for? You know what I mean? Like, we're in London here, we're playing like, up warm with scrubs or something, and somebody's shouting about zones and stuff, you know? So I'd say this particular game, and hopefully there's a game after, we're not going to be going gung-ho as we usually do. But, I mean, I'd say that's the sort of game I like to play. It's a game I played when I was growing up and I played all my life, so. It's a game I like, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, well, you played on down teams that were absolutely played unbelievable football. Whether we ever go back to those days, I think the game might be changing around away from that after Tyrone and Monaghan getting hammered by Dublin playing very defensively. Maybe it's moving away. But you are right, though. It's almost highlighted in London where you're trying to keep football alive over there. You're trying to give lads that outlet to enjoy themselves. And then if you're starting to get shite games out in London, it's not exactly going to be promoting the game amongst the expats.
Absolutely. I mean, nobody wants to turn up to McGovern Park on a Sunday evening, you know, if there's a match on and go out and watch two teams, you know, with 15 men behind the ball each time. You know, that's not enjoyable. It doesn't sit over here, and I'd say nobody would be interested in watching it. Generally, most teams do go for it. You know what I mean? There's a very state. We have a great standard of footballers in our team, to Conor Gales and St. Kieran's. They really are good footballers, like, you know what I mean? And they're enjoyable games to watch because they're usually high scoring. Both teams going for it. There's, you know, a few hurry tackles from here and there. So, you know, they are enjoyable games. Go to, you can go to a club game at home and walk away from going once and name it, use them ways doing all week. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's just not what you would call maybe at home where some man's in from maybe the manager club and it's results based only. You know what I mean? So he's going to make sure that he's not going to lose all these games in the league or whatever, in championship. Whereas over here, it's, you know, you're in and go for it. Try and win the games, you know.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right in that one. Come here, talk to me about how you got involved in Fulham Irish there, Greg. How did this come about?
Well, I actually have a friend who used to work with me at home when I was doing joint at home, Gary O'Hare, who played on the last team in 2011, who won the championship over here with Fulham Irish. He was cornerback. He had come back home, but he'd been working at home now, his own business at home and stuff. So he had actually rung Marty Hughes, our full forward, and said, look, McCartney's over there to work. You're a good man to get involved in your setup. At that time, they had no manager, and Marty rang me and said, look, I hear you're coming over. And I said, I'm going to get a chat and you come over. So I went up one day to Rice to meet him. I wasn't living that far from it, and up and watched him playing. And he said, do you fancy getting involved? And I goes, well, I said, I don't mind. In what capacity? You just do the whole thing. He said, just train them and manage them, whatever. I said, well, sure. I don't know. I've enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. So that was like April past there. So you know, a year and a half out now. But I really enjoy it. You know, and I say it gets you out of the house because it's not as bad as walking in London and you know, go home every evening and sit and look at the four walls. Like unless you come to the weekend, we might go for a lot of beer. But I mean, the weeks can be long. You know what I mean? Unless you're over here a long time, it can be. It gets you out of the house. You meet new people. You have a bit of a laugh. You get shit. Sometimes, for sure. There's life, isn't
it? Yeah, no, that's it. It's a good social outlet. Come here, before I let you go, I was reading an interesting one there of Pete McGrath's last game as down manager. It was against Longford in the league. And I think this was 2002, was it? Tell us about this, because this is almost like GAA has gone so professional now. This is a throwback, even 2002 when it was getting professional. This is like an absolute motley crew of a carry-on. Yeah. Go on.
It was actually Mike Bulges, I think, that his first year coming out of minors and stuff. So him and Mickey Linton were playing Longford, and it was one of those days when, God, Jesus, changing rooms were like a barn. It was unbelievable. Like, not the down had anything spectacular. This was back to the 50s kind of stuff, with grime coming down the walls and stuff, and wet floor and all. So we arrived in early, but I broke my finger and got a plate put in my finger and a pin put in my finger about 3 weeks before it. So I was just back at training that week. And as I was doing the bit of training, or a little bit of the game, I actually went alright in the game, but I told one of the boys, Mark, I punched the ball. I just don't catch it. I just don't punch it. I'm going to catch it because, you know, his finger's very delicate. And I was still wearing like a plastic cast on my hand when I wasn't playing football. I wasn't supposed to be playing football, obviously, but Pete never timed me to bring the gear or anything for Sunday. So I travelled down with the team anyway on the bus, and Mickey Hinton and Michael Walsh, they took a wrong turn on this, and they ended up 40 miles away from the pitch anyway. So we're standing the changing for the game. Pete comes in, he looks at me and he goes, what's your gear? And I goes, I no gear. I says, you didn't tell me to sit out. So he just goes off and huffs and humps the head. So he goes back about 5 minutes later with a pair of these, like, I don't know, the like Speedo shorts and a pair of socks. He goes, put them on you. I goes, I'm not ripped. And he goes, I get you a bit swell. So I've got a pair of Mickey and Faye's, that's about size 12. So I'm like, trying to run them out. So right on the field, Mickey and them didn't ride to be 15, 20 minutes into the game. And Paul Barden had an absolute field day, so they went maybe 10 or 11 points. And I never forget Damien Watson down the sideline. So we're 10 points down. I mean, I could see Pete talking to Damien Watson. Next thing I says, one of the boys, hope he's not thinking, I'm going here. No chance. Next thing, what I can say, Greggy, get that out. And I goes, I'm not going on there. I says, no chance. I says, do you want any young players run out? I says, no point me going on there. You know, I could write my finger or anything. And I go, say, the game was up. It was nasty ass in Bush. I wasn't going to change the game that day. So.
Yeah,
didn't bog it on, but Pete he was lying after, so it was a sad day too, like, because I've been with him a long time, but it was a bit of a funny day as well, you know. Funny in my eyes, but
it's a funny story. So Mickey Linden's gone the wrong way in the car, doesn't even show up because his directions are wrong, so there's no team buses, you're in a pair of shorts miles too small for you in someone else's boots with a broken finger. Yeah. And you're getting caught on.
Yeah, it's exactly. And they thought I had a moving. I don't know, I was just a complete disaster all day. And then get stuffed into the bag in the middle of Longford.
Yeah.
Damn, disaster.
Yeah, listen, disaster. It's an absolute classic. I think the writing was on the wall for poor Pete McGrath after all those happenings. Maybe it was just a sign. It was some sort of a sign that agreed.
I think he himself was playing so tall enough that, you know, that crap.
Yeah, classic. Right, listen, Greg, come here. Thanks very much for taking the call. And sure, whenever this match is against Cara Finn, we'll be watching it. And sure, best of luck. Hope you perform and do yourselves justice in it.
No problem, Willie. Thanks a million. Thanks for that. Good man. Cheers.
Yeah, so obviously that interview with Greg McCartan was done before the announcement today that that replay, well, it's not a replay, that that match, it's the All-Ireland quarter-final, is now on the 21st of January in Ruislip. So obviously me and Greg, when we were talking, it was recorded a little bit earlier today, we didn't actually have that information during that interview. But it's interesting as when he paints that picture, and like, I mean, they've no facilities and they're training, they're togging out on the side of the pitch. Like, that's, I don't know what you think, but togging out on the side of the pitch is poxy of the highest order, especially if the weather's not well. Like, where do you, what, oh, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Trying to pawn your socks, just balancing on one foot. And these are professionals landing in suits. And you think there's a commitment in Ireland, and then you see lads that go to other countries and how to keep that going and keep the GAA alive and keep the love of their GAA, that they'll come across a city in a suit, tug out on the side of a field in the rain, throw their suit into back of Greg McCartan's van, go out and train, no shower, put the suit back on over filthy legs, and then head on home, and you might not eat again. Like, I mean, it's just, I don't think people realise the kind of culture. And I kind of have a good idea of it from playing in America for 5 summers, but like, I mean, it's an unbelievable commitment just to keep going that hobby that you love.
And like, what you're not even factoring in is the commute. What's in London?
Yeah.
To be an hour, over an hour. Like, yeah, it's incredible. And it is, like, not to get so romantic about it, like, but then when you do, you just get to
go
out and kick the ball. Like, but like, you know, if you weren't doing that for a year, you would soon miss it, like, and you'd be wanting to do that commute and throw the stuff under the back of the van. It's a big commitment, but there's something so beautiful about it as well, isn't
there? There is something beautiful about it, I'm not going to lie, there definitely is. And it's great to talk to Greg McCartan. He's a real character. You know, you might need some sort of Ulster translation kind of device or something when you're listening.
Be the interpreter, yeah.
Towards the end of it, he was starting to get really talk really fast. I was like, we might need to put in some sort of translation down in some piece of it written out.
He's curbed in there as well. He's living in London, like, so that's the one that people understand.
Yeah, but it must have been an inconvenience. And even the Moorfield Lomans game, that's obviously in Portlaoise this Sunday, and I saw people on Twitter. Craig Rogers from Portlaoise was given out and going mad at the Leinster Council for not having an alternative venue in mind and leaving it so late to call off the game. And Aaron Kernan was kind of joining in, agreeing with him. And I don't know, like, I mean, there's nobody will criticise the GAA as much as me when I think they deserve it. But, like, I mean, they've only got one more weekend before Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, this is the last weekend they can play. So, like, I mean, of course they're going to give the game every opportunity to go ahead. Yes, there was a weather warning, but that's not to say the weather is going to start snowing until 3 the next day, 7, 5. You know, like, I mean, they gave it every opportunity. And for the game, the teams involved, they know about the weather warning. They know they'll have a meeting the night before, and lads, there's a good chance this won't go ahead. So be prepared one way or the other. You know, so there's not a huge inconvenience or a huge shock. Cara Finn should be rightly put out that I think when you talk about the cost involved in them going over, that maybe there could have been something done for them, as in, lads, we might call that off a day before because of the cost involved. But sure, for Lomans and Moorfield, it's not the end of the world just to give it right up until that morning.
Yeah.
Then it's off. But the alternative venue even doesn't stack up for me, because the dangerous road conditions and the travelling for supporters is still an issue regardless of whether there's a pitch.
And when would there have been a guarantee that said alternative venue would have been okay?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, like, I don't really understand it either. You haven't heard, I don't think there's been too much cribbing from the clubs involved. As you said, it's Cara Finn that were more inconvenienced. I was actually in London at the weekend and not flying back till Monday, and a load of the Cara Finn lads were on my flight back to Knock. Didn't seem too pissed off, because by all accounts they were all talking about that story that was on Sports Show, actually, about having the great night out. And by the looks of the few of them, they really enjoyed that night out, so they have a month to recover now anyway, so happy enough
again. And I'm sure Conan shed a tear Monday morning, and that's what the GAA is all about.
You're actually starting
to get me doing this now as well. This romantic GAA, and I'm even ranting about supporters should get on, because that's what the GAA, I actually even said that that's what the GAA is about. You're influencing me too much here.
One of the boys, Niall, the desk, just spoke to Greg, and Greg said, we picked up the phone and we rang Micheál Lunde and told him, come across the city, you're coming out with us. And Fulham Irish and Cora Finn went out together. There might be enemies in the pitch. They're only Gaels at heart, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they probably all fought each other in the chipper at about 3.
But it's funny, like, you know, the April blackout, that's probably the real kick in the teeth, because it's like Cora Finn have to come back from London with no game, but, you know, you'll have April free anyway, lads, don't worry about it.
But that's it. So, like, I mean, their costs were out of control. Another thing interesting this week, I thought, was I obviously tried Enna O'Connor to talk to him about the match, and Moorfield just kind of had a Daryl Flynn earmarked to do all their media, so he didn't want to do it. So then I rang his father, Jack, and asked him, did he want to come on the podcast? And Jack didn't want to do it either, because he said he's doing a little bit of work in the background with Moorfield, and I hadn't actually known that he was helping out in there. And, you know, there's a, like, an idea of where Moorfield have come from, that you've someone like Jack O'Connor, you have these two sons, which are obviously the main kind of help for Moorfield, but even for Jack to be in the background, even if he's helping out, taking the odd training session, I don't think you can even quantify having someone as high profile as him in which it just gives that extra sense that we're prepared this year. And, like, obviously psychologically, these little things all add up, and Moorfield are now in the final. But anyways, lads, this is all we have time for. We've one game at the weekend. That's it. We're down to the last one game. And then 2017 is coming to a close. So we'll have no games to look forward to next week, but we're going to do a best of. We'll bring you the some of the interviews that we really liked during the year, and we'll have a little chat around them. So there will be a podcast next Thursday. And so we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.